Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Good, my friend. How are you?
Great. You made it back safely and in one piece, though I imagine a bit jet-lagged after Seagraph and a visit to Los Angeles afterwards.
Though the advantage of being jet-lagged is you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and can watch Doctor Who as it's being aired simultaneously around the world at 5 o'clock in the morning with
that,
your daughter.
That you're very much a glass half-full type, my friend.
Yes, but anyway, it was great to be over in the US. It was terrific to be at SIGGRAPH, but most importantly, I enjoyed hanging out with you and the FX PhD team. It was great.
Yeah, it really was. It was really fantastic. Mike was also joined by Ian Fales, who writes for FX Guide, also helps out at FX PhD as well. Mike visited ILM in San Francisco beforehand, I think we talked about, and then headed up and met for, a full week at Seagraph. And it was quite interesting because talking to people at the show, especially the manufacturers who have their exhibits open on, I think, Tuesday even, not even Monday, they're like, oh, this is great. It's our first day. And Mike and I were like, well, we've actually been going nonstop since Saturday, starting with DigiPro.
Yeah, that really was. And you know what? I think DigiPro is a really good conference. It's small, and to a certain extent, it overlaps and has varying content each year. It hasn't really settled down. There's like it's in its third year, but I enjoy it, and it's a good group of people.
It is a really good group of people. I think you can learn a lot about a conference by the type of people who attend, and it's really some. Oh, I guess you could see well-placed individuals, some heavy hitters, some certain people, people at high, CTO type level at various companies around the world. And as you've pointed out, a small and familiar audience for many of the people there. And I noticed, as you did, I think that many of the speakers referring to people in the audience by their first names who had throughout. And it's really a nice vibe, but, definitely a lot of, in essence, collaboration and sharing of knowledge, I guess, which is what I really like about it.
Yeah, in fact, I think there was like three quarters of the SciTech committee for the SciTech
right.
Oscar stuff in the audience. It was very funny.
That was actually really interesting discussion by Doug Robel, who actually kind of helped to demystify the process regarding getting a SciTech. It's really an interesting process. I don't know. I know you knew much of it. I knew quite a bit of it. You probably knew more than I did. But there's still stuff you brought up that I found quite interesting as part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about the SciTechs is that it's been a bit of a black hole, a bit black box, I guess. People are quite unsure as to how it works and what it does. And we've just had the latest round of SciTech. Some of the nominees, it's sort of like consideration list, but even that's a little harsh because it's things that kind of caught the attention of the SciTech committee is probably the best way to put it. And yet that won't bear any relationship whatsoever to what's actually handed out by way of SciTechs when it actually happens. But on the new list, we've got a bunch of things, some of which are very close to our heart. Some are much more, on-set kind of stuff and some things monitor-based, etc. But let's say RV Media Player, which is by Tweak Software, which many of you would know from running alongside Shotgun. That's in there as consideration. At this point in time, that may or may not prompt everyone in the world who's doing collaborative and enhanced image playback review systems to come forward. And this may cause them to say, well, we're not going to give it this year because it's a bit too confusing. I know already that SpeedTree is in the consideration list. And so other companies that make vegetation have been actually asking on their lists, because I'm on some of those lists, hey, could you submit any examples or rather I guess like a list of work that you've done using our product because we're about to approach the SciTech community. So it's a very complicated process, but I enjoyed hearing how it went through. But also the other thing, Doug Noble from DD who gave the presentation, what a guy. We've known Doug for years, but he's like one of the best speakers. He's just so entertaining.
Yeah, it really is. It really was a lot of fun. And as you point out, again, saw that from the Frog guys actually about their stuff today. It's one thing you may be thinking of or mentioning. And that's an important part of the process. I mean, I think the two things that really sold it for me or sold home what they meant is, first of all, a winner of the SciTechs actually has to fundamentally change the way movies are made, or actually have a big impact, I should say, in the way movies are made. It could be the best technology in the world. It's used in TV commercials only. Not going to get a SciTech for that. I think that's an interesting aspect. And then the other thing is the vetting process, which is quite considerable. And Mike's referring to, I think, was a couple weeks ago. Was it before SIGGRAPH or maybe right after SIGGRAPH? Where
16th of August.
16th of August, where the Academy unveiled about 20 people or 20 considerations. And the idea being, let's put these out there. Let's see if there was prior art existing. Let's see if there were other people out there. Let's see who else was working on it. Maybe the people they nominated for a SciTech award, or maybe different people through as part of our discovery process. And it's really, again, I thought, like you said, it was a great presentation and really helped demystify the process for, I think, many people in the audience, frankly.
Though if I can be a little amusing here and go down a rat hole, I don't know the hell the frog guys were thinking sending that out. The deadline for additional, the additional kind of, hey, I would like to be considered, if you're considering them, consider me, was Tuesday the 26th. I think they sent the email out on Tuesday the 26th. So they had, I think, a matter of 6 hours or 7 hours after they sent the email to get their submission in by...
It's called working to a deadline, I guess.
Yeah. So as I'm recording this, it's the 27th. So it must be the 26th where you are. So literally midnight your time, John, is the closing off date. And that email only went out. I'm joking about the 6 hours, but it must have been like 24 hours.
Got it this morning when I woke up, effectively. Okay. That's when I got it, yeah. So
18 hours on 18 the clock. 18 hours. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's basically it. Again, it is an important part of the process. So yes, I chuckled a bit about that because I actually thought it was over. I thought that deadline was passed, but apparently, they maybe just not recently so got aware of it. So anyway, that was a great presentation. Just one thing that was part of DigiPro, to kick things off on Saturday. And then the conference SIGGRAPH started on Sunday with really a full lineup. In fact, the first session that we wanted to go to, they hadn't even opened the press offers which is where we could get our credentials to get in. So, the folks there know us really, really well over the years. We've been going for many years in a row. And so they were happy enough to let us in before everyone else and get us our badges. But we were like, you're not even open at the first presentation?
So we recorded a lot of stuff for FX PhD, which is, of course, one of the reasons we were there. So I just thought I'd flag how some of that stuff's going to appear. So inside background fundamentals, basically now to the end of the year, we're going to be including material that we either did at SIGGRAPH or on the same trip, which is to say some stuff out of LA. And John and I had an amazing day on the Monday in LA. I can't tell you all about that yet, but it'll be going into background, I think episode class 9. But in the forums, you guys asked for us to check out things like Nukigami and what's happening with Clarice and a bunch of other things. And so we did that. We went and did these interviews. Now, sort of soundbitey little tiny grabs, like teasers, if you like, are in this current episode of FX Guide TV, which is episode 193. But the in-detail discussion about those, about stuff to do with, for example, we went to the job fair and spoke to recruiters, stuff to do with jobs, stuff to do with software. The things that you guys asked about are all being packaged up and going into various classes between now and the end of the term. And in a very real sense, the interviews we prioritized at SIGGRAPH were ones that you guys had posted in the forums saying that you were interested in hearing. And while we've put a soundbite in FX Guide TV, you know, like a short grab of what it's about, the in-depth sort of, obviously, you know, 40-minute kind of sessions will be over in background. And I'm really glad about that because there's some phenomenally interesting stuff that we're going to be able to cover. The first class is actually class 6. It was a little delayed, partly because I've had a bunch of issues traveling and also some, you know, personal stuff. And the thing is that 6 is a little delayed, but it's got in it our VR stuff. The VR stuff includes stuff we did at SIGGRAPH, but also at VR LA, where we spoke to the guys at New Deal Studios who'd been filming and... they'd been using the Jaunt system, and Jaunt's system since got an extra $28 million in second or third round financing, taking up to about $34 million. So this is a really interesting area of content creation, and it's the content creation that we're interested in focusing on because we hope you guys will be able to, some of you, use your skills in that area and be at the forefront of being able to develop stuff for this this area. So we're talking to the Foundry, we're talking to a ton of companies about the tools as we go into this new era of kind of Facebook-funded Oculus Rift joy in the VR community.
Yeah, and it really is picking up. In fact, after we came back from Seagrath the next day, we actually went into it again in a effectively user group, and that's what Mike's talking about. And if you take a look, again, similar to what I was saying about the DigiPro attendees, if you took a look around the room at this event as well, it was pretty telling because it's all people who are who would be very familiar with the FX Guide. We're very familiar with them, and you can see people are taking quite a bit of interest in it. In fact, we even ran into some of our FX PhD profs at this event as well. So
that the RLA that John's referring to is the third of such events. The first one was held at Digital Domain. The second one was held at USC ICT. So that gives you an idea. And the third one's at New Deal. And the theory is that LA is a good mix between Silicon Beach, the kind of tech community down there, and the film community, and that VR is a sweet spot for exactly that. So apart from trying on helmets and stuff and looking at various demos and applications, we also heard some really interesting lectures. And I really enjoyed the day, but it was, what, 400 or 500 people queued out the door?
Yes, and 400 or 500 degrees inside it. But yeah, we went outside and just filmed the line because there's just so many people getting in. It was in a big, huge, you know, it was at New Deal Studios, a big, huge space. Stages, but it was quite packed, though, and it was actually good that they had it there. But you know, it was a lot of fun. It was amusing because I was going around filming B-roll, and as you'll see, there's, you know, one person watching something in their Oculus Rift is pretty much similar to anyone else watching something in the headset as well. So it's kind of amusing about that. But
I got my cardboard.
You have one that's
Rift working.
Yeah. Okay. So explain that, because that was hill fucking hilarious. I really love that. What is this that you're speaking of? It's totally
so literally,
cool.
Imagine an Oculus Rift is a helmet with a monitor in it with goggles that have lenses that look at it.
This
is
high
a
tech.
Cardboard, yeah, this is a cardboard version of all of the same. So you say, but how, Mike, do you watch it if it's cardboard? Well, you get your iPhone and switch on an app that runs stereo footage in it, and then slide your iPhone into this cardboard apparatus. Sound confusing? Well, it's featured in Background Fundamentals. You can see me playing with it. We've got links if you want to do it. But the Oculus Rift Developers Kit 2 has just started shipping. I got to tell you, this thing is like a lot cheaper. It's not as good as an Oculus Rift, and obviously there's certain limitations. But, you know, the accelerometer in the iPhone, or for that matter, the Google phone, knows which way you're looking up and down. So in the class, I put it on, and I'm on a roller coaster. Unfortunately, I put it on and I'm looking backwards on the roller coaster. I would have to turn around completely 180 degrees, have my head to the camera to actually ride the roller coaster. So when I was demoing it, I was riding the roller coaster backwards. But that's what happens. Yeah.
But, you know, it was really easy to chuckle about it, and it's really amusing because it is. It's like it's a cardboard thing. You go, like, this isn't going to work. But it is actually surprisingly effective, especially if you take into consideration the Retina display on the iPhone.
Yeah.
I think that has a huge impact on it as well. It's not as immersive, you know, as the Oculus Rift, but I mean, it's impressive. And what it does show is you can get actually something that's quite interesting and compelling to watch at a price point that is approachable. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I actually think it seems more immersive to me than watching a 3D film in a theater.
Yeah, I think the problem at the moment, and we cover this particular aspect of it in Background, is how do you get the quality of the displays up? Because you're really talking about real-time rendering. And one of the things that we hit at SIDGRAPH, which I tweeted was one of the most interesting pieces of tech there, was Otoy's light field rendering technology, which is basically like a pre-render that then allows a fully immersive real-time render, but with all of the complexity you'd want from a feature film level render, as opposed to a game level renderer that most of the Unity type Unreal engines are. That's what's currently being used to fire most of these things up, and so they look good, but they just look, you know, pretty much like an Xbox. The Otoy thing, you know, takes it to the next level because you do this pre-rendering stage, which you'll have to see in the class to understand. But there is a part of it also in FX Guide TV. But using light field technology, it means that you are getting spectacular interactive rendering, unbelievably so. Mm-hmm. I literally thought, hang on a second, you've broken some law of physics. Whoa, back up here, pal. But I think we discussed this before, John. The ridiculous thing for us is that on a booth that had lots of blinky, flashy lights and colorful things to get your attention, this was like on the corner, down on the side, because they only just got it working.
Well, I feel better because it was, as I joked in the FX Guide TV, I'm like, you told me about it. We ran over there yesterday, and Mick and I were just totally bamboozled by the light stage, portable light stage, and really miss this thing on the tiny little table. I think he even tweeted about that yesterday that you responded to. But yes, I'm like, I went over there twice, and then by the time I went back, I think it wasn't working, or it was down, or they didn't have it running or something by the time you actually educated me about where to find it. And more, it was gone and I couldn't see it. But really sounds like amazing technology from what you were saying.
Yeah, actually, that brings us to another really interesting point, is no matter how busy you are at a SIDGRAPH and no matter how focused you are on being organized, and God knows, thanks to Ian, we were pretty organized, you have to allow yourself time for just poking around. I think that's true kind of in every aspect of our industry. You don't kind of know what you don't know until you've bumped into it. And so sometimes you need to be able to do a bit of almost aimless drifting and talking to people to just try stuff. And I tried a few things that at SIDGRAPH I thought, quite frankly, were pathetic, really just dumb. No use whatsoever. In fact, you know, it was like, okay, I don't get this at all. And I understand what you're trying to do, but if that's what you're trying to do, this is not doing it. Thanks. But for that, for like every one of those, you get an OTOY where you go, oh my God, this is, wow, I would build the whole booth just around this. And like, well, we just got it working. And in fact, when you walked back, the reason it wasn't working is they were updating it because they were trying to get it like a better version implemented, and they kind of broke the build when they were trying to load it up. It was that kind of got it working the day before the show kind of thing.
Yeah, not, you know, similar to my comment before we started this podcast, when Audio Hijack posts, you want to do an update? I'm like, you know, now not such a good time. No. Maybe the trade show at SIGGRAPH when you had it working, maybe not such a good time to try and update it.
It's really tempting. I've got a slightly better build. I was working on it last night. Let me like, now it's broken completely. And they were like, well, I want to see this thing. Yeah, come back. And that's the other problem. Coming back is really hard to do.
It is really hard to. Actually, I went back. You ran into something with some goggle display technology that actually worked really well for me. But there were other things there that, you know, because it really is bleeding edge, there's just stuff that was promised to be on the show floor that wasn't there or was only there for a day. It's really interesting that, you know, frankly, the risk that people are taking to try and show this stuff, because you don't want to show it too soon. You don't want to show it when it's not working, but you know, can you afford to wait another year to make that big impact?
I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. So it's actually kind of an interesting thing, but always a great conference. I actually took in some cool tech papers. The real time live is always fun. The daily session was great as well. So much great stuff at SIGGRAPH, and just fun to actually see so many of our members there and hang out with you guys.
I got photobombed by Vader at the Island party. Does that count?
Yes. That looked like a very fun party, actually.
Why weren't you at the ILM party? Why was it that...
Oh, I had a great time, actually, at the Maxon RealFlow party. Yeah, there were so many members, PhD members there, profs there. Actually, Tim Clapham was there. I want to hang out with Tim. As well as a couple people that I knew from Chicago, and also, frankly, that's actually one of the places that actually let's just say firmed up a new course for the October term coming up. So it was fun. I was jealous that there weren't stormtroopers or R2-D2 running around and anything like that. Ewoks, none of those at the cool Maxon. But it was actually a fun party, and the drinks were flowing and great chance for networking. So, you know, no complaints on my part, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, it's not necessarily something that you... I don't know if you've seen this or not, but just can I go into a bit of a, I don't know, rat hole?
Yes.
We spoke a while ago, I think we did, about Zinc stopping. We did. Did you see that Google bought them today?
I did, actually. Yes. Belatedly, I had some emails from someone asking if I want to get a little bit of background information before they announced it. This was an email 2 minutes before they announced it. I want to point
out. All right, good.
But yeah, interesting, huh? That I think getting some significant monetary and technical backing for Zinc.
Yeah, because they'd been on Amazon, right, before?
Mm-hmm.
And presumably, they're now switching to Google's cloud. Because that's the whole point of the deal, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. Well, yeah, I'll bet a lot of it, you know, number one has to do, it's going to be a great set of resources to actually help Zinc overcome some of the issues they had and also just grow and expand and do more. But it's also a bit of a, you know, I think Amazon's AWS and other cloud computing solutions are really seen as, being driven in the Amazon kind of ecosystem. And this is kind of one of the first ones that I know of, not that I pay super close attention to it, that is going to be moved over to the Google platform. It's just kind of interesting.
So in your opinion, and you do follow it more closely than I mean, you're being slightly modest, but the Google Cloud platform just doesn't seem to get the press that Amazon's does. Is that representative of the fact that Amazon's is like considerably wider in its use, or that Google just uses its own stuff and doesn't need to get other people to use it?
I believe number one, it's not in as wide a use. I mean, this is not being used by end customers. Google's, let me clarify that. Google's platform is not being used by nearly as many customers as Amazon's platform. I mean, if you look at most websites, you'd gather that great majority of the larger ones are being run off the Amazon platform in some form or another.
Right.
Whether that's the computing platform, whether that's Amazon S3 storage or Amazon, I'm going to get it wrong, it's either CloudFront or Cloudflare. CloudFront is Amazon. Just because they've been around, it really works. There's so many, there's so much great information online about how to utilize it. The tools are robust, things like that. So I think that's why Amazon has an edge. But, you know, Google is so big. They obviously have tremendous computing resources that they can do. They can maybe afford to cut prices, because that is one thing that's happening. Every time that Google ends up cutting prices, for instance, on their storage, Amazon follows. So it's actually, in the end, really good for end users. And those users are us, frankly. That's one of the reasons we've kind of switched over and we're able to get rid of our torrent, because the file transfer and storage charges just became so incredibly inexpensive utilizing Amazon that we moved to that, because it made sense for our users.
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, Amazon on paper, if you go back, whatever it was, 10, 20 years ago before they started doing this, I don't know how many years you have to go back before Amazon started doing this, it didn't seem like an obvious fit. Like, they were, you know, a book company that delivered stuff. So massive cloud computing didn't seem to be their thing. But today, I know Amazon to absolutely be, you know, my sort of jumps to front of mind when I think of that kind of stuff. But I would be, you know, I mean, completely rationally, I would believe if you told me that Google was, you know, three times the size in terms of cloud computing, just that Google has entire copies of the internet
for, yes,
you know, doing fast searches and stuff, which, you know, requires a bit of compute power. So I have no doubt that, Google has the stuff. It just doesn't seem as widely outside Google used.
Exactly.
But that's only from sort of an anecdotal kind of thing.
That was recently. Well, last time I checked, that was somewhat, that was true. But I don't know if things have changed or that platform shifted since the last time I kind of dove into that kind of deeply.
I mean, you're really playing with the big boys, aren't you? Like, I mean, if somebody like Google makes a decision at the level that they're talking about, the computational sort of tectonic shift of kind of the world is enormous, because these are vast, enormous farms. And I think that, you know, the nervousness about the cloud has subsided. I even think that a lot of the hype around the cloud has subsided. I didn't get a lot of that, you know, we're on the cloud at this SIGGRAPH, and that I did at the previous one. The previous one, everyone seemed to be needing a cloud solution because that's what was required to, you know, just have.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I didn't get that this time. It more felt like a sensible part of an overall business strategy. But yeah, I mean, God, that's a hell of a thing for Zinc, because I thought Zinc was going to tank completely. I mean, I thought that was it. That was game over, walk away.
Yeah, well, because they just certainly did run into issues. And it's good. I'm glad, you know, it's interesting that Sean Devereaux, of course, who's taught courses for us in the past at FXPHD, he's going to hang out at Zero and concentrate on that post production facility that he's built, and obviously has a love for doing visual effects and so forth. And the guys of the team are going to, I guess, head out west and concentrate on Zinc. So hopefully it's a good fit. I mean, I love the idea of Zinc. I still think it's a really difficult problem to solve in our industry. I don't think we're at that level where it's super easy to use and widespread use due to cost, bandwidth, transferring stuff up and down. But boy, if there's anyone who can put some muscle behind it, it's Google, right?
Absolutely.
It's really interesting to see. So I think really good for those guys. I think it's great for them. I'm really happy for them, actually. So a bunch of really good people at Zinc.
So I also wanted to just ask you, speaking up on a point that Ed Moore made, a good friend of ours who's a DOP in London, he had a very simple question, which I thought was true, which is, how long do you reckon, or has anyone actually done the math on how long it's going to take for all of humanity to have dumped an ice bucket on their head in order to get to kind of ground zero? Just curious. I mean,
I've not done it yet.
I'm just waiting. Like, it's spreading. And I think it's, I think there's a lot to be learned from this, but the biggest one for me, I'm really glad that a charity is making money out of it. I'm glad that this is not one of those things that's a phenomenon that is a complete waste of the, you know, the time and energy of all of humanity. But that being said, oh my God, that you could come up with a viral thing that would have this much impact. I mean, last time I heard it, it raised $40 million for a disease that previously hadn't been on many people's radar, I don't think. I certainly don't think it would raise, you know, that kind of money.
No, then, you know, some of the criticisms I've seen about it are there's not enough talk about that. But frankly, they're at a stage in their finding a cure, finding treatment, where just having knowledge that the disease exists, and this exists, is actually a large part of what they need to do. And it really is an amazing example of how it can be effective. I mean, it's pretty brilliant in retrospect, of course. I doubt even they knew that it would be this big. I'd be surprised.
I mean, every day I'm just stunned. I'm not stunned. Yeah, I am. I'm stunned that it's just continues to move forward at the pace that it does. I mean, I only say this because somebody sent me one of Amy Adams and Henry, what's his face, from, you know, Superman. He's in his Superman costume getting a bunch of ice dumped on his head on set, right? And I'm like, I'm just thinking to myself, like, you would kill for that kind of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of like several hundred million kind of such, well, not 100 million, but you know what I mean, like thousands and thousands of such Twitter and Facebook posts. So if raising awareness is your game plan and it doesn't hurt that you make, you know, $40 million, then wow, because, you know, I can't imagine a bigger single awareness raising charity strategy that I've seen. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, I really cannot think of one. Honestly, it's amazing. So, but yeah, very much a testament to the power of social media in this day and age. And I echo your sentiment. I'm really glad that it is a charity that is making this money, and you know, and not something else. That's one thing. It's hard to knock what's going on with it. It's really quite brilliant.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to get going, my friend. But it's been great talking to you.
Yes, good talking to you. I miss you, man. It's like it was really been odd because we basically hung out for a week and a half together, more than a week and a half together,
couple
which
of weeks,
is really
yeah.
Awesome. So it was odd not talking to you every day after you headed back. But glad you're back in one piece, getting stuff done, and we'll look forward to the next time we're together. But
And thank you guys so much for being part of PhD. As I said, we're in the second half of the term. Things are going really well. We're already starting to put together what's going to be happening for next term. But I think you're really going to enjoy the stuff that we still have in the second half. I just want a big, big yell out or shout out on this challenge that we've posted in the forums. I forgot to mention this earlier in the podcast. Sorry, John. The challenge has been revived. We have a challenge now posted in the background section of the forums. It involves a Dracula and a zombie. We'd love you to take part in this. The rules are all up there. All the information that you need is up there. The clips are up there to download. This is, again, completely in response to requests. For those of you that have been with us for some time, you'll remember we used to do challenges every term. Now I stopped them for a bit. I thought that maybe people were getting what they needed in that respect from the individual courses, and then people were like, why aren't you doing the challenges anymore? So they're back. So please enjoy them. I know that people have started downloading stuff, but yeah, we'd really like you to hit it. So it's in the background section, July, obviously, 14 term, and there's a thing called Background 233 Challenge.
Yeah, and please,
you'll see it. It's really obvious.
Yeah, please take the time to do it. If you haven't done one of these in the past, like Mike said, if you joined more recently, you probably haven't seen these. Do it. Take the time to do it. It's a really valuable learning experience. It's one of the great things about PhD.
And they're totally designed so that you can use them on your showreel and stuff. Mm-hmm. And in fact, as you'll hear when we do our thing. People actually quite like seeing PhD footage on people's showreels, especially if you're, you know, sort of at a lower level and, like, you know, not a senior guy in the industry. The reason is that we don't give a prescriptive solution. It's not like do X, do Y, do Z, and you'll get the same result as everybody else. What you get is your interpretation. So they understand the footage, but they can see that you've done your own thing, and they can understand what that is because, you know, a really good recruiter may see a lot of reels and therefore may have seen the footage, but that's not a negative. It's actually a positive because things like this are individually tailored to whatever you decide to come up with as a solution, as opposed to, as I say, like this kind of prescriptive A, B, C, D, and you end up with exactly the same thing that everybody else does. So, yeah. Hit the forums, and I'd really welcome you guys submitting on that challenge.
All right. Thanks for your time, Mike. And hey, we'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
See you guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.